regular programming to bring you a message from Her Majesty's government. Please stand by and await further information. This is not a drill. They have arrived.
Ladies and gents, people watching at home, people listening on Apple Music, Spotify, whichever music sort of thing that you're listening on, downloads, whatever it is, very special welcome. I have my first ever podcast guest all the way from Fix Radio, one of our sponsors, one of the people that we've partnered with. And I'm going to say a very big welcome over to Louis.
Mate, I feel very, very honoured to be on the first ever podcast. I wish you the best of luck. And
we might need it. We might need it, mate.
I'm sure not. Every faith in you.
Oh, fingers crossed. It's one of those. We're gonna roll with it anyway. But the reason, ladies and gentlemen, that I got Louis on. So Louis, he's going to tell you a bit about Fix Radio. But basically, I, as a business owner from Unilight, got in contact with Fix last year.
Yeah, about 18 months ago.
So about 18 months ago, looking for another avenue apart from social media to promote Unilight as a business. Mm. Now, I looked around, there's publications, all that sort of stuff, but obviously with social media now, you know, print media to me is, it's dying on its ass. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's going to...
We're allowed to say that? Can we say
that? Yeah, you say what you want. We're all friends on that. So anything that you want to say, we can say. But from my perspective, I needed to try and find something which was going to hit my target audience. Now, Fix Radio, every tradie's got a radio. Mm. And I just thought, what way can I sort of get into somebody else's mind rather than if they're not on the phone, what else are they doing? Mm. And for me, I stumbled across you guys and literally haven't sort of looked back since. Mm. So, I mean, from my perspective, the reason that I wanted to have you on the show is to just tell people a bit about you, Fix Radio, how the idea even started. So just go back pre-Fix.
Yeah.
And just tell people sort of how you had an idea. You woke up one morning to plough a load of money into radio station.
So you want me to go back to when I had hair, full head of hair?
Full head of hair. not stressed, not losing your hair.
Yeah, okay. And can I just say before we start, I've got serious studio envy being in here. It looks absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he's done a good job this year.
Yeah, he's done a good job.
He's done a good job.
So, about 5.5 years ago, I studied business at uni and then applying for jobs in the city, didn't really know what I wanted to do, and spent about 6 months working on building sites around where I lived.
Yeah.
I'm not a tradesperson. I have the utmost respect to anyone in the trades. It was probably the hardest work I've ever done.
But did you literally only last 6 months?
I was working for a grounds worker, and he was, I don't know if all this is how it works, but he would basically just sit on the digger.
Yeah.
And I would just be on the front line with the spade, just doing all of the foundations.
And the wheelbarrow.
Yeah. So I just died for six months. And apart from learning how hard it was to be a grounds worker, I also realized that builders listen to the radio all day, every day. It's like such a big part of their life. First thing that goes on in the morning, last thing to go away at night. And I was just surprised that there wasn't a radio station directly focused at that industry, which is a massive industry. It's such a tight-knit community.
Yeah.
And that's what gave me the original idea about 5.5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you then go from conception to actually going, right, okay, I'm going to start this business? Because as everybody who's probably listening thinks, it costs money to start a business, whether it's a plumber or a sparky, and they're getting the van kitted out, the tools to go in the van, the sign writing, the letterheading, the business card, the website. How do you go from that's the idea to actually putting that into process? Because for me, part of the thing that holds me back sometimes is the fear of going, well, you know, we've just spent £20,000 on a podcast.
So
is anybody A, going to listen to me?
Yeah.
Or B, is it going to work?
But, yeah. Mate, brilliant question. And I know we're going to come on to like advice and bits after that, but I think the hardest thing is actually just starting. Mm. Like, unless you actually give it a go, you're never going to find out.
Yeah.
And also, there's never any guarantees. Anything, you've got to take a bit of risk to see whether it's going to work or not.
Yeah.
And I think I was so lucky that I didn't hesitate before giving it a go, because at the time I was living with my folks, didn't have a girlfriend, didn't have any kids, didn't have a mortgage. So if it all went tits up, then there's nothing to lose. But in terms of getting it going, I actually worked at another radio station for 6 months just to try and learn as much as I could. And while I was doing that, I was putting together a business plan, trying to speak to other people in the industry, work quite closely with a radio consultant, a guy called Paul Chandler, who kind of gave me a bit of industry insight. And then for me, it was two things. One, market research. So I just borrowed some money and spent about 10 or 15K on some really good market research to find out what radio station builders listen to, what radio stations builders listen to, what they don't like about those stations, what they would like from their own radio station. And that for me, I wanted to see whether it backed up my own findings from my own personal experience on the sites. And if it did, then I thought, right, I could have something here. So I did that research, came back, like, green light. There was some really interesting insights about the sort of things that they find annoying about stations, what they would like from their own station. And then from that, I used that to put into an investment deck. The research helped. Ultimately, I had nothing to go off on the investment deck because I've never run a business before. I've never run a radio station. And so you need, you know, there's obviously risk there, and investors are wanting to see that there's some evidence to suggest that this business is going to work. And I use that research.
So did you seek outside investment originally? Because, I mean, that's another thing that a lot of people don't wish to do, is they wish to do something, but then they don't wish to back it with their own finance or actually hunting to find investors. Because that for me, which people are just going to turn on the radio and listen to, you know, the Ball Builders, Clive Holland, all the people that you have on there, and not realise just how much risk you were willing to take at the start.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you don't have to tell us, but in terms of, like, investment, what kind of crazy figures, because for me, no doubt, a radio station working in the music business before isn't a cheap idea. So just,
well, I started off just trying to bootstrap it, so I found these studios in London, and I went to them and I was like, guys, you might get this a lot, but I've got an idea for a radio station, want to start it up, I don't have any money, will you let me just rent a desk for a bit for free? And what I did was I would bring investors to the studios and I'd just show them around, like, here are our studios, this is studio one. And they'd be like, this is all pretty impressive. This is very sophisticated. So I did that, and I tried to take as far as I could without investment. And then ultimately, I didn't have any money myself. I did need outside support. And I won't say how much I've raised in total, but I did in my first round 150K. And you can get something called SCIS Finance, and that's brilliant. So any investor that puts money in, they get 50% of their money back. And so for anyone who's sitting on a big tax bill that wants to reduce that, they're looking for opportunities like that. So I didn't find it. I just spoke to a lot of people, and you know, a lot of people thought it was a good idea and were kind enough and crazy enough to give me some money. And that's what got me going right at the start.
Yeah, I mean, that in itself for me takes a lot of balls. Is it sort of like, you've got an idea, you believe in the idea. Probably when you first started, people going, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so then, not only with none of your own money, you take other people's money, which A, is hard to do, it's hard to go and find that, but B, the pressure that comes with it. People go, oh, well, it's not your money. Actually, when that investment comes, obviously you're excited, but then at the same time, like, it must have been like a real big sort of sense of fear of, shit,
do you know what actually, it wasn't until the first 20 grand was actually transferred into the account, and then I was like I actually have to do this now. This is serious, because you talk about it.
You can't give the money back.
Mate, you can't give it back. And I'm like, okay, I'm actually committed to this now. I've got to see this through. And you're right, it's other people's money, and people are, you know, they're backing you. And so you want to try and make it work. And yeah, it's pressure, definitely.
Yeah, it's big, big pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything that you've sort of, you've faced as a big challenge, anything really, apart from obviously the finance that we've just touched on?
Yeah.
What else has been a challenge to you? Studio, finding somewhere to rent. Obviously, the again, when people are listening to the radio station, they're just listening to the presenters and not realizing that in the background, I mean, you told me previously, rents in London for a studio. I mean, are there other challenges that you've, apart from financial, that you've faced in trying to get this thing off the ground?
Everywhere. I feel like building a business, you start with a million problems, and then bit by bit you're solving them as you go along. But I tell you, right at the start, your biggest challenges are that it's a chicken or the egg. So you're trying to build an audience, which is really difficult because you're changing people's habits. People that might have listened to Radio 2 or Absolute for 10, 15, 20 years, and you're trying to get them onto a new brand. And then you're also trying to attract commercial sponsors that want to see an audience before they're happy to give you your money. So how do you, and you need their money in order to invest in marketing. So it's trying to juggle all of those. And I remember for about 7 months, it was me and one other person, and I was just on the phones just trying to generate advertising space. And I was going nowhere. Like, no one, they're like, not only, so how do we know how many listeners you're going to have? This was pre-air, so I haven't even started there. How are we meant to know how much money I should give you if you have no idea how many listeners you're going to have? And really challenging. And so what I was like, it was seriously difficult. And then what I realized was that I had this plan to run a Bacon Butty tour when we first launched. Yeah. So we gave out in the end 20,000 free bacon sandwiches to London builders, spent about 30 grand on bacon.
Yeah.
There was a new Mercedes sitting outside the back of that cafe. His best mate. Yeah. But anyway, I realized I was going to spend that on marketing. And what I needed was to try and get these early contracts across the line was something tangible that they could put a value to. And so what I did was is design these packages where you could get some advertising space on the radio station.
Yeah.
And then also I'll put your branding on the side of the van. And when I go to sites, I'll give out some of your flyers, interrupt the trade. And I built 10 or 15 of these packages. And that was what allowed me to bring on my first 15 commercial partners, which got us going. And luckily they came back and that got us going at the start. So that was a really big challenge right at the start.
Yeah.
Other challenges when you're small is attracting good talent. Yeah. You know, ultimately people are taking a risk joining a startup. And so it's difficult to get the right people on board, which was a challenge. I think they were some of the ones at the early days. You know, now more recently with COVID, for example, everyone's doing their shows remotely, which is great because we don't have the cost of the London studio. But in terms of capturing video content, which is really important, really difficult. And so we're trying to work on solutions to that, whether that's like little home studios that people can build or some other ideas that we're playing around with. But that's kind of a current challenge that we're facing now.
Yeah, there's. I mean, every day I come to work, and every single morning there's always something else.
Yeah,
it's normally
normally
to do with the manufacturing side, but every day there's something else. I mean, if you were to look back, or even look at the current situation, because you know the business now is 4 years old. You know, which in itself for me, like most companies, fail within the first 18 months, 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Now to get that far, and the business is still growing, because obviously I've privy to the numbers myself because I do business with you guys. I mean, what is there that you would look maybe back on or current situation and say, I wish I'd have done more of?
It's really tricky because I'm never in that mindset. I'd never like to look back. I'm learning and I've learned so much, but I'm always trying to just look forward. So it's really difficult because I wouldn't want to, you can get into a bit of a negative mindset sometimes, can't you? But I mean,
do you ever look and think, well, if I'd have just done that there or I'd have done this here,
I think I could have used the finance I raised a bit better.
Yeah.
So now being a bit more experienced 4 years on, I would understand how you could use the money for growth. So putting it into marketing or how you can use it to grow commercially, whether that's new salespeople, B2B marketing managers. Yeah. Whereas previously, I didn't necessarily use the funds for growth. Funny enough, actually, a big cost was recruitment. So trying to hire staff, and then if the staff don't work out, then A, they haven't moved the business forward, and B, I've used a lot of energy and time to train them, and then C, you've got the cost of their salary and all the rest of it. But
national insurance,
but, yeah,
tax,
but the
pension.
Thing is, I can't say that I would have done anything differently there because you've got no guarantees when you're hiring people, and it's really challenging. So mate, I'm looking forward. I've learned so much, and I continue to try and learn and make sure that you minimize mistakes along the way, but I'm sure there'll be many more
every day. Every day. I mean, you know what, you sort of touched on this before. What would be your, to anybody that's listening that's thinking about starting their own business, whether they just think, I'm going to go self-employed, I'm going to start another radio station, might be to be to do with something else, might be somebody that, you know, is another trade radio station. What would you advise somebody that's looking to start up as being, this is what you need to do in order to succeed? Because it's sort of, you know, it's literally like when you look back, you probably think, God, like, a wasted money or a wasted time or wasted energy on certain particular staff members. Yeah. What would you, because there's no fast track to it, but what would you say are the things that you would say to your younger self, maybe? Yeah.
The number one advice I would give is start.
Yeah.
Because 99% of people don't start. And actually, starting is the first thing, and then making sure you've got the ambition to and the vision on where you want to go. Because if the vision's there and it's big enough, then you just got to slowly eat away at it. And ultimately not run out of money. If you can stay in the game and keep dealing with your problems and staying in the game, then you can get to a result. So that would be the biggest bit of advice. I think practically, get experience in the industry that you're in. I only worked at a radio station for 6 months. I probably could have done 2 years and learned a huge amount more, but I was in a hurry. And so, you know, be patient, try and learn as much as you can. And then, you know, get people around you who have had experience of doing what you want to do so that they can help give you some advice so you don't have to learn from your own mistakes.
Yeah.
But, there was one other thing I was going to say. Can't remember. Lost me.
I mean, to be fair, when I listen to you talk, there's many things that I personally can relate to, because it's sort of, you know, I've got it now.
I'm back.
Let's have it.
I'm back. One other thing I realised is that there's no rule book. I was trying to hunt around for an investment deck for a radio station or out there thinking someone else must have done this, but actually very few people have gone from A to B, so actually come up with an idea and seen it through. And so you start by trying to hunt around and find it, but actually you need to just back yourself, and you're never going to be able to just carbon copy an idea. So try and take as much learnings as you can, and then be original and back yourself and go for it.
Because that's another thing as well, is like, from my experience in the music business, obviously online streaming, you know, radio stations not getting as many plays anymore and stuff like that. To see you guys actually grow in a market where some people aren't and some people are failing is, like, to me, that's a, you know, commendable. So, you know, the reason I had you on the show is it's interesting to me to actually see that growth from that side. I mean, going forward, what are the future plans for Fix? Obviously, I believe Andy told me the other day that you're heading into Bristol now, so people will be able to DAB in the car. Bristol, Birmingham.
So we're in London and Manchester currently.
Yeah.
And then later this year, we're growing into Bristol, Newcastle and Leeds and possibly Birmingham as well. So soon we'll be in 5 major cities and there's a huge amount of construction work going on in those cities. So we're super excited about that. And then our ultimate vision is to be a national station. There's 2.5 million builders across the UK. They listen to the radio on average for 7 hours a day. So there's a massive market there. And we are set on trying to get a national license and becoming the home of news, entertainment and music. That's our goal.
Just explain to people about the license side of things, because I presume you need a regional one for each region, and then you need one for a national license as well, and the regulations that go with that.
So in each region you need a license. Ultimately there's only a finite amount of licenses, and at the moment they're all full up, and so you're waiting for opportunities where someone doesn't want it or they run into trouble, and then it's a bit of a beauty parade, so they'll auction it off and you have to put forward a bid. And
I dread to think how much some of those
bids are. You know, but if you think of the size of the market, and brands are looking for ways to hit an audience on a national playing field, I think commercially it's quite exciting as well. So I think it's proportional to the cost of the license.
Well, I think that sort of wraps it up from my side. I just want to thank you for traveling all the way back up from London to here to the studio. It's been great having you on. Love hearing about the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
And also obviously working with you in the future, the Trade Legends podcast, Fix Radio stuff. So thank you very much for coming on, Lemmy.
Thank you so much.
And before you go,
because
I know you want to know, we did a we did a fastest lap for Louis on the leaderboard.
I've still got the sweaty part.
And you'll be able to put this on the board. So let me just get the old track time here. So for everybody that's listening on the actual Spotify and stuff, I'm just getting out a sort of strip here to write down the time that Louis did his fastest lap around the Bahrain circuit on the F1 2020. So you did it in... Let's just put Louis down here because my writing is abysmal.
Spell my name right. That's impressive.
Look at that. Normally, we've got a Louis in the office. So have you? If I'd have got that wrong, he would have killed me. And it was 1 minute, 1 second.
Yeah.
And 7.52.
First on the leaderboard. That could be terrible or it could be amazing.
I'd say so far, that's pretty...
So far.
Well, no, because we've had a little go ourselves. Yeah. And I think, what's the lap record, Jack? The world record for it? 55 seconds. Yeah. So actually, you're not too bad, mate, off the bat. Yeah. So we'll get you to put that up on the leaderboard. Nice. So I'll chuck that across over there.
Right.
Put it right at the top so we can never get it down.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Legends podcast. Bloody marvellous. With thanks to our sponsors, Church Farm Brewery, the best beers in town. Also, Power Tool Mate. If you want to get your hands on a really good tool, it's the only place to shop. Lastly, our good friends Fix Radio, the only radio station specifically for the trade in the UK.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I am here and I'm going to introduce to you the biggest, the most notorious pipe bender there is in the whole of the UK, probably the world, the one, the only PB Plumber. Welcome, Pete.
Hello, mate.
How you doing?
Yeah, good.
So, Trade Legends, we are here after maybe 2 years of me thinking about doing a podcast. Me and you are finally here, little and large, the bicep, and... I thought it would be a good idea to have you on first to potentially talk about you, your stigma to the word legends, which unfortunately adorns the whole wall here.
One thing I said to you when you said think of a name, do not use the word legends.
Sorry.
And there it is.
Sorry. So we will brush over that. But anyway, I wanted to get you on first. And I know obviously we're going to be co-hosting the show, but I wanted to talk to you personally about sort of like, I hate saying stuff like this, like your journey, but the stuff that sort of brought you to this point now. Yeah. So how you got into plumbing, how you started, all those types of things, because you probably get asked this type of stuff all the time, which can get annoying. I appreciate that. But there's so many people out there, obviously me and you, how we came together is quite an interesting story for me personally, but there's so many people that'll be listening or watching that sort of look up to your work and they'll want to know, how did PB Plumber become PB Plumber, basically? Yep. So, you know, I don't know whether you want to give a bit of backstory first about how we came to sort of meet.
Yeah, we can do, yeah. So, obviously, when we met, I was balls deep in social media by that point. So I was doing Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. And I guess you were looking for people to work with in the social media world, in the different trades, but... The problem that me and you had was that the product you had out at the time was predominantly made of yellow plastic.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a massive fan because I had at the time been to a tool fair and just bought a really slick powder coated aluminium.
You can say it.
Work light.
Scan grip.
Which I was really happy with. It had a magnetic base. It was made of metal. And then you said, I came over to your stand. We had a look at yours and I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Felt like it was like a Fisher Price toy kind of thing, which I told you, which I think you appreciated because I was being honest.
Yeah.
And then you brought out your own range that was metal.
Yeah.
Really liked it. The rubber lined on the edges. It was a hexagonal shape, magnetic, ticked all the boxes. So I tried one of those and I loved it. And now that has replaced all my scan grip gear. I had some lead lenses stuff as well.
Yeah.
And now it's all uni lights.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's sort of a bit of background how we came to be. I mean, the one thing, the reason I sort of approached you anyway initially was when I look across social media, there's certain people that do certain things and it obviously works for them. But me as a brand, I always look for people that sort of share sort of values and how they work and how they communicate across their social channels. So obviously when I first sort of approached you, I didn't really realise probably sort of how big you were in the plumbing market, but I sort of looked at how you worked and thought, well, that's somebody that I could potentially work with. Obviously, the feedback that you gave me completely changed sort of the mindset of how we work within here. So it's that sort of thing that I want to try and get across from you today to everybody that's going to be listening or to watching, as to sort of how you decide, like how you do a job, how you like a product, all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, if I was to sort of say to you, how did you get into plumbing? You know, what's the backstory there?
So my granddad was a plumber. My dad was a plumber. And so it was a family business. Yeah. I used to work school holidays, some holidays with my dad or with my granddad.
Yeah.
And then I don't think my dad wanted me to get into the trade. So I did my A-levels and then I was going to go to university, but I took a year out to work.
Yeah.
As soon as I started working and earning money,
I didn't want
to go back to school. And I was working at a quarry. So I used to travel around the country, taking samples of concrete and tarmac off the backs of lorries and on sites. And then we'd keep samples of them and test them. So if anyone had a complaint about the product, we'd test it and say, no, it's all fine. It's the way you've laid it. So I was doing that, and you could go to college and do concrete technology, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about doing that.
Is that what you would have done if you'd have gone to uni?
Well, while I was doing this, while I was working at the quarry, I was trying to be a fireman. So I was applying to different fire...
Sorry, ladies, Pete did not become a fireman. That is definitely a calendar for next year.
I was applying all around the country to be a fireman. I had a part-time job as a lifeguard because I thought that would help me. So I was working at a pool. I was working at a garage doing petrol pump attendant.
Yeah.
And I was doing my job at the quarry.
Yeah.
But I passed all the physical tests. I passed the written exams. I used to go, there was like 100 people sat in a gymnasium in a school or something.
Yeah.
Do these written tests. I pass everything. And then I'd never hear anything. So I don't know whether it was my age or what. So
how old were you?
I would have been 18 at this time.
Okay.
And then my dad just said to me one day, do you want to do a plumbing apprenticeship? So I kind of bit his hand off because I like working my hands.
Yeah.
And the tradition of it, family business, meant something to me. So I went to do that. Didn't work with my dad. So my apprenticeship, I worked with a guy called Kev.
Yeah.
And he became like my best mate. We used to have... literally would banter all day laughing. That's probably the one thing I miss about working on my own now.
Yeah.
Not having someone with me. But we'd just go around to jobs. I'd learn off him.
Yeah.
We'd have some fun.
Would you say he sort of shaped how you are as a plumber? Which influence
taught me how to do the job.
Yeah.
But he was complete polar opposite to me in that when we went to a job, he'd be like a bit doom and gloom, like, oh, we're not gonna be able to fix this or it might be a disaster.
Yeah.
Whereas when I go to a job, it's like, well, there's rules away, we can fix this. So we're kind of different like that, but I did learn the trade from Kev. So
yeah, okay. I mean,
I owe him a lot.
Did you eventually go and work with your dad? Did you ever?
Never worked with my dad. He would come out to site, check how we're getting on. He'd bring us materials. He'd arrange the jobs because he was sort of coming to the end of his career when I was starting. Both his knees are plastic because obviously kneeling half your life is not good for your knees.
Yeah. Well, back then, nobody even really bothered with knee pads or a knee mat or anything like that.
So he was more just seen as the boss, and we'd just go out and work, and you wouldn't see him that often. But he was pulling the strings behind the scenes.
So here's another question then. If you weren't a plumber, what would you have been? What would you, if you were looking back on your younger self now, would you have gone into the fires? Is that something that...
Definitely, that was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like helping people.
Yeah.
I would like to do, I like animals.
Yeah.
I think you can tell by watching my Instagram, I love dogs.
Yeah.
I like animals more than like a lot of people.
It's not a bad shout.
And I would probably do something with animals, but not, I wouldn't be a vet. I don't think I'm clever enough to be a vet, but I wouldn't want to see them hurt, maybe. That wouldn't be the kind of thing I'd want to do. So something maybe looking after rehoming things and...
Okay.
Anything like that. Anything where I can just get stuck in and do a honest day's work, really.
Okay. I mean, the other thing that I want to get into, because obviously you're sort of, I call it a persona, but you're sort of, I don't know, your brand, the PB Plumber brand, has sort of really taken off with social media.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll quickly go on to this because this is such a big chunk of sort of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
But also sort of, you know, how we both as brands have grown Unilight or yourself. I mean, do you think social media has changed your job? Has that had a big impact on the way that you work or the types of things that you're doing, the types of jobs that you're getting? Has that had an influence on your work recently?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So obviously we all as guys on social media do the same job.
Mm.
The way I like to explain to people is if, let's say you employed me and another plumber to come to your house, we could both, say the job is to pipe up your cold tap at your kitchen sink.
Yeah.
So we could both do it and get water to come out the tap.
Mm.
But the guy who is, in my opinion, the better plumber, and this is all through social media that I've learned to be the better plumber.
Yeah.
Because there is, you know, fastest way possible. It works.
Yeah.
Give him more money. See ya.
Yeah.
The difference in flow rate out of that tap can be worlds apart just by doing the job properly.
Yeah.
Now that the impact of that would be even more if you're in the shower. Because you stood in the shower, you've got two showers, you turn them on, water comes out. Mm. One of them, you have to run around to get wet. The other one, it's pressure, it's flow rate. You have a really nice shower.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between what I think me pre-social media and me after social media. Seeing the quality of other people's work and upping my game.
Okay.
And that changed me. Yeah,
yeah. Because I sometimes feel like social media, you get wrapped up in... like yourself and only you, but that answer I probably wasn't expecting you to say. Well, actually, watching other people's work has sort of pushed you to raise your game.
Definitely, yeah.
Work,
seeing other people do it, learning new things, wanting to expand your knowledge, all from seeing things through social media. I also got it because I worked with Kev my whole apprenticeship, and then once I qualified, I went out and did site work with another plumber or two other plumbers.
Mm.
And just the thing of seeing inside their vans and how they stored their fittings.
Yeah.
You know, the way Kev did it was the way then I did it in my van. But then I went out on site.
Yeah.
And I was keeping them in limb bins, so just loose in bins.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went out on site and all his fittings are in a Stanley Fat Max organizer. And it's like, wow, this is brilliant. I didn't even know I could do that.
Yeah.
I've not seen it done before.
Yeah.
So now that's what I do.
Yeah.
So that's why social media is good, because you can, if you follow 100 plumbers in the UK... you can learn
off every
little
single.
Tips and tricks off 100 of them, and then you become an amalgamation of that 100, and then you're making yourself better, you're improving yourself.
Yeah, because what you've just said there, I'm sure people that are watching this or listening to this, they're probably thinking, well, we do that when we watch you. So they probably don't think that you're doing that as well. I mean, that's part of the reason why I think, like, I sort of want to work, or we do work with you, is I sort of respect that you always want to sort of better your work.
Yeah.
It's like a work in progress. Some people I feel will get to a certain standard and then that's enough for them, which is fine.
It's a male dominated industry. There's a lot of bravado.
Mm.
I fit 100 boilers a year. I do this. I make this much money.
Yeah. Is that something you think needs to change, that it's too male dominated?
I don't sign up for that. I just want to be who I am and do what I do. And my big thing is to, share my knowledge with other people.
Yeah.
And that's why I do what I do. So a lot of my content is, you know, I started off on Instagram, and I would sometimes I'd get a new tool and I'd lay it out nice and I'd take a photo. But what benefit is that to anyone?
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing a new tool. What benefit you can get
from
that?
There's a lot of that on.
Maybe tempting you to buy the tool.
Yeah.
I want to give them content that's going to teach them something, or give them some information that's, you know, worthwhile, that helps them to make themselves better. So my content now, that's what I'm trying to do, because anyone can just take a photo of a tool or whatever. So
is that what you've said to yourself? Are you going to try your different, like, different?
I kind of evolve, like, I'll do something and then a lot of people will do it, and then I'll think, I need to be different, so I'll move on.
Mm.
It's like when I started my YouTube channel, I did a day in the life video blog.
Yeah.
And then so many people started doing it
that
I got bored of it and I stopped.
Mm.
And that was the most common message I got. When are you going to do another YouTube video?
Yeah.
And then I worked out that YouTube pays money, because Instagram, having 55,000 or whatever I've got now, you get no money. Nobody pays you. You get offers of free tools, but when you're a tradesman running your own business, how many free tools do you need?
Mm.
So if I ever got free tools, I would do a giveaway and just give them to an apprentice.
Yeah.
But actual real money,
YouTube
is the one.
So Is that something now that when you're collabing with, obviously with Velocity and with other brands, is that something that you're consciously thinking, well, actually, you know, I've got this brand, I'm well revered, I'm well respected. How can I actually now use some of that knowledge, not only to make a better product, but actually to get a bit of financial reward for basically the skills that you've picked up? Obviously, the bags that you do are great.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something for you that in the future you'd like to do more of? Is that something that you're planning on doing more of with brands?
So at the minute, I don't tend to do any paid partnerships. Mm. And I like to keep it that way so that your average plumber can relate to me. I like to film all my stuff on an iPhone.
Yeah.
Don't have any fancy recording equipment.
Yeah.
And when I said about making money, YouTube means I can literally film myself working.
Yeah. And get paid.
Doing my job. And all you do is you click monetize. They put adverts onto your video. Mm. And whoever's watching, the adverts will target them. So if they're into fishing, they'll get a fishing advert on my plumbing video.
Yeah.
If they're into plumbing, they might get a plumbing advert. I don't choose the adverts.
Yeah.
So I can get paid for just showing what I do as my full-time job, Monday to Saturday in the week. I sit down on a Sunday morning, I edit the video, and it normally goes out about 6 p.m.
Yeah.
So the money is paying for my time
to
on
show
a Sunday
your knowledge.
to edit it. The time I put in to edit the video, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd feel comfortable, you know, taking it the step further and getting loads of brands involved. The stuff I do with products like the Unilight, you don't pay me to do that.
Yeah, which a lot of people, I'll be honest with you, they still think that you're paid, or other people that I send products to, they think that we pay everybody. Whereas
it's a natural thing to think, because I used to do a lot with Weira Tools because I really like their tools.
Yeah.
And I've spent a lot of money buying their stuff.
Mm.
And people just assume that they're paying you. Well, I only show stuff that I like and I think is good. The only other thing I will do is I'll show new products, and I don't charge the person. I just like to, if there's a new product and they approach me, I say, yeah, sure, I'll show it, because it's helping them out. They've obviously took a big step bringing a product to market. And all I'll do is I'll have a look at it. I'll have a play around with it. I'll make a 60-second video showing what it does, what it's about. And I'll ask people, make your own mind up. You know, what do you think of this new product? I'm not telling them, this is great, go and buy one. I'm showing it them because I've got a platform now that I can do that. And so make your own mind up, what do you think of it? And if they like it, then they can go and do their own research and buy one.
Yeah.
But I don't charge people to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like I do this because I like doing it.
Yeah.
So, and do you feel, I want to keep it that way.
Do you feel other people do it because they want to be Insta famous? Is that, do you get that vibe off people, or is it just?
I don't get the vibe. I think, a lot of people might look at what I do and think I can do that.
Yeah.
And fair play to them. There's room for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't.
Who's one account just off the top of your head that you really like? Who's somebody that you feel like they do what they do because they're passionate about it, but you really like their content? Because obviously, it doesn't even have to be a tradesperson. I mean, what's one account that you think, actually, I really like that account?
There's a lot of accounts that I like. I wouldn't say I've got like a favourite one in the plumbing and heating industry.
Mm.
The two of note to talk about is Tony from Unequalled Heating.
Yeah, he's worked unreal.
A guy called Dennis Hollingworth, whose tag used to be Do It Like Dembo.
Yeah.
Because they're the guys that were doing the awesome pipe work, the soldering, and they kind of made me want to do it and try it.
Yeah.
I'm only doing it now because I saw them doing it.
Yeah. Tony's works like an organ in a cathedral.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Unbelievable.
So they're the kind of inspirational accounts where you see their work and think, yeah, I want to do that. Mm. And now I've kind of gone full circle where I'm inspiring people. But it's because of guys like that.
Yeah.
So I think as long as there's a few of us promoting the industry, promoting, you know, the best standard of work, good practice, it's good for everyone.
Yeah.
New guys coming into the industry, they've got role models, they've got work to, you know, aim for.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of obviously plumbing them, like, you know it way better than what I do. Obviously, I've got you in here to sort of extract some knowledge for everybody watching or listening at home. What are the things that you dislike, and what are the things that you feel could be massively improved, not just for yourself personally working, but just for the industry in general, whether or not it's trades as well? It could be that this applies to all trades. Is there stuff you dislike in your job, but is there also something that you feel like people are really missing out on? We're really missing a trick with, whether it's regulation, whatever it is, I don't know. But is there something you can think of for that?
I mean,
or is there loads of different things?
There's loads of things. I mean, customers, you know, just lying to you.
Yeah.
can you come and service my boiler?
Yeah,
I can. When you get there, it's not working.
Right.
Why don't you tell me it won't working?
Yeah.
You know, push fit pipe.
Yeah.
Makes everyone think they're a plumber.
Right.
Because, you know, you can push.
Stick it in and then it works.
push two bits of pipe together. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
There's loads of things. I just think that we need to have these people that are showing people the right way to do it, best practice, and then they're going to inspire, because anyone can do fastest possible.
Mm.
It's thinking about it, holding the job in high regard, working to a high standard,
yeah,
and raising the profile of our trade, because, you know, I'm a plumber.
Mm.
Don't sound glamorous, but without a plumber, you've got no hot water, you've got no central heating, you've got no sanitation.
Mm.
It won't be very long before you're in hospital, feeling not very well. And if the hospital's got no plumbing, you're dead.
Yeah.
So it's a very important job.
Mm.
And
all trades are important, though. I mean, like, back in the day, it was always stressed, education. Everybody's pushed to go to uni. I know one thing with you as well, which is very similar to us as a business, trying to encourage apprentices. So, you know, one reason of having this show as well is to sort of highlight things like that, the women in trades, like, you know, tool theft, all that sort of stuff. So that's one reason of basically us being on the show. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, future plans then for you as well, because I'll try and wrap it up so we don't talk too long. Future plans for you, for the podcast, for anything else, what do you sort of see as your future? I mean, you talk about trying to educate people. Is that something that you'd potentially look at going into in the future?
Yeah, I mean, at the minute, I'm really enjoying my work. I went through a patch where I wasn't enjoying it, but I'm back to where I was before.
Was that due to COVID, or was that just...
I think I'd overworked myself. And then, when COVID happened, having the time off, because there wasn't that much work to do. There was still work out there, but at the very start, when people were unsure, they didn't want you in the house, it really slowed down. And having that time to be at home, like, I had a new kitchen about 7 years ago.
Mm.
I only finished the tiled splashback and the skirting board around the door and painting around the door because of COVID.
Yeah.
Because I was just working too hard.
Yeah.
So
was that good then to have a break from it all? Was that?
I think it's done me good, but I just couldn't. I found that I wasn't motivated when work came back on.
Yeah,
I was getting to a job and I would sit outside my van, look at my phone, just not up for it.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I was looking forward to every job.
Mm.
But I've got that back now. I think YouTube helped me with that, because I was thinking, I want to get in this job because I might be able to film this. This might be a good video for YouTube. So,
which one's your favorite social media there? Which is your favorite platform? Do you have one, or?
Well, I first started out on just doing Twitter.
Yeah.
So that was my favorite. Then I started doing Instagram. That became my favorite. And now I'm doing YouTube, which I quite enjoy at the minute. The only thing I don't like about YouTube is editing the videos. That's like such a ball ache. It's like paperwork to me, which I hate.
Well, the thing is, people don't realize, I mean, we've got Jack sat over here, Charlotte, and a few other people sat out there. The amount of time and effort, even just to do a 20-second TikTok video,
it's just
phenomenal. I'm sure anybody sort of starting out wanting to do their own channels and stuff like that will understand.
You're a bit old for TikTok, ain't you, mate?
That's why I got Charlotte over here. But, you know, I just wanted to obviously start with you on the show. We're going to be co-hosting it. We're going to have loads of different people on as well. I mean, what type of guest or what type of direction do you want to take the show? Because obviously I think me, from the business perspective, we've already had the Fix Radio, Louis, who runs that on there. I find that sort of side of things really interesting, because some guy who just woke up one day and decided he wants to do a radio show. What sort of stuff are you looking to bring to the show? What type of guest interests you for the show?
I mean, well, if we've got tradespeople hopefully watching and listening, it's going to be the people that are going to benefit them. So I think what would be a really good thing is to get people on the sort of paperwork side, the running of the business side, because you don't tend to hear or see too much of that on social. So if we could get someone in who could advise people about, you know, setting up their own business. A lot of guys message me asking about, you know, pricing jobs, how to even get the work.
Yeah.
So maybe someone we could talk to about advertising, just things that we could help people with their businesses. But then obviously we can get different tradesmen in, because we've all got different opinions. We all do the job differently, and then we can sort of chat about that. And yeah, funny people.
Oh, somebody with a sense of humour. There's not many of them left, but we'll try and find some of them. But anyway, everybody listening at home, that was the introduction with Pete. If anybody's got any more questions, obviously when you listen to this, obviously if you're watching it on YouTube, always leave a comment, always ask a question. Pete's always up for having a discussion with people, super helpful. And if I can answer anything, because obviously I'm probably not that interesting to most people, I'll try and do the same as well. So we've just interviewed Mr. PB Plumber, and he had a little go on his Thai car. PB Plumber, I can say that you did it in a 1:02:008.
Okay.
So that is literally like less than a second. That is really, really tight. Louis's going to be loving it. He's going to be licking his lips all the way back down to London.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Legends podcast. Bloody marvellous. With thanks to our sponsors, Church Farm Brewery, the best beers in town. Also, Power Tool Mate. If you want to get your hands on a really good tool, it's the only place to shop. Lastly, our good friends Fix Radio, the only radio station specifically for the trade in the UK.
I'll change the words so it's not so offensive.
Pete. So we're going to start this segment off with a PB Plumber gag. Gag of the day.
What's dirty and yellow?
Oh, God.
And has a really small penis?
Me.
Me in my dirty yellow coat.
Oh, come on. Come on. Why are you wearing a yellow coat? That's what I want to know about.
That's the most offensive thing.
You did say you wanted to be a lifeguard. That made me laugh. I was interviewing you. And literally, it was a lifeguard and a fireman. Jesus Christ, there's so many calendars.
Well, I did the lifeguard job to try and get me into the fire service.
Zac Efron mixed with, who's a decent firefighter? Got to be somebody that's played a firefighter in a film. Zac Efron in Baywatch, mate. He just turned around to me and said he wanted to be he was a lifeguard and training to be a fireman. I was like, some people stand in the darkness, afraid to step into the light.
I did 3 years as a lifeguard, and the only person I had to help was a girl who
I thought you were going to say not really old man.
No, there was a girl
Kiss me, Pete.
Playing outside, and a fence fell on her and hit her on the head.
That's outside of the swimming pool?
Outside the swimming pool.
What a fun and job
the best
that is.
One, there was a guy who had Tourette's in the pool, and every time he got down to where I was sat in my chair, he said, wanker, twat.
What made you think he had Tourette's?
I'm trying to think of anything else. No, nothing else. Nothing ever happened.
So we're here on part two of the show. Firstly, we've got the man of power tools, Mr. Nathan Cox.
Yep.
How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Nice to have you on the show. And we've also got the lovely Joe Reynolds, who is the producer of these lovely fine Trade Legends beers. So welcome to the show. I'm sure Pete's just as excited to have everybody on with his gags. So the reason for having everybody on the show, obviously I've just interviewed Pete as well, is to sort of give everybody a bit of a backstory about how this came to be. So 2 years ago, I had a silly idea that I'd like to do a podcast. We designed a set, wasn't that great, revisited it, COVID hits, you make beers. I had your phone number in my phone for a very, very long time. That's very worrying for my girlfriend, but I did. And I actually picked that up from getting my wedding suit made. So those guys gave me a beer while I was having my wedding suit fitting, which I can't fit in the suit now. And they said, this company is just based in Warwickshire. So just down the road. So I never really did anything with the number. And then you came along as well to start buying Unilite products. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then everything has just sort of fitted in from here. Obviously, I told the backstory of when I first met Pete. And yeah, just wanted to get everybody on the show and have a chat to you individually about what it is that you guys do. And yeah, sort of here we are then. So Joe, beers.
Right, okay. I always usually introduce myself as the perfect woman. Now, don't look at me like that. I own a brewery. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Nope.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I remember meeting you, and I say it was through your tailor that made your suit. We made his. We made their beers too.
Yeah.
And I say it started from there.
So how did you get into making beers? Because originally you, well, Wren milked cows, wasn't it?
My husband's a farmer.
Yeah.
And he milked cows. And in 2012, when the supermarkets started selling water for more money than milk, we had to do something else so to survive. And he liked beer. He liked making beer with my sons. And it really started from there, home brewing. And that was in 2012. In 2016, we won a British Farming Award for innovation and diversification. I always stumble over that. So innovation and diversification. And then we were on Country File on the BBC.
You love that programme, don't you, mate?
And watch it. Antiques Roadshow comes on first, so I'll watch that first.
John Craven came to the farm.
I don't know who he is.
Yeah. He's a legend.
Yeah, John Craven.
I know you don't like that word.
You know who he is, so don't make out.
He's the chap with the white hair. Yeah. Blue pizza. Blue pizza? Yeah.
Exactly.
I can imagine you having a Blue Peter badge. Did you get one?
No, I didn't actually. My nephew got one years ago, and I put it on my Twitter and said it was mine.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because you could get gold ones as well. They did gold ones at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really, as I say, that put us on the map, and we've just grown and grown.
But again, obviously, when I interviewed Louis earlier for Fix Radio, what makes you, when you're milking a cow, suddenly think one day...
To be honest, the beer thing came about. Yeah.
Suddenly think one day, if I put a wig on Daisy.
we went to the States on holiday.
You can't say that on the radio.
No. We went to the States on holiday, and the craft beer movement is massive in the States.
Yeah.
And so my eldest son, who is an accountant.
Because it wasn't that big back then, was it?
No.
Craft beers.
So he said, you know, we can do this. And of course, at the time, I mean, everybody knows I'm 60 and I was like 50 at the
time.
You're
never 60.
You can tell by Peter Plummer, can't you? You're never 60.
So like my son said, you know, we should do this. We'll invest in it. He said, we've got to go big or go home. And I said, that's easy to say, isn't it, when you're 30?
Are we able to ask you how much it costs? Because I know you mentioned it to me.
Yeah.
But obviously sometimes people don't.
The brewery cost us $250,000.
Wow.
So...
Big investment.
So Jesus Christ, I better bring some more beers.
Yeah. Drink up, everybody.
Yeah, better buy some more beers.
I know, yeah.
So, yeah, but we future-proofed at that point.
Yeah.
You know, because we could
have... Did you go big and go hard on it?
Yeah, and that's what Sam said.
So when you make a craft beer, when I did my kit bags, I made them to suit me because I've used different bags over the years, never had one that I thought was perfect, so I designed my own. Mm. Do you do them to your taste, or do you have to do them, get a load of people to taste them and then find what the
initially, you know, it was done by, you know, what my husband liked and what my sons liked.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you evolve, you have to increase that, you know, different tastes that you do. But basically, it was just what they liked.
Yeah.
When they first started, we probably pour more beer down the drain than we ever sold because of, you know, trying to sort of perfect a flavour or...
Yeah,
a style.
I mean, do you want to just explain to everybody that's listening what that sort of process is? Because I know Wren's talked me through when I visited the brewery.
Yeah.
How does, again, obviously, you know, waking up in the morning, you decide you're going to produce beers. How do you then go about producing a beer?
Right, okay. So
don't try this at home.
No, do try this at home. Absolutely. Because that's how we started it. Yeah. So it was a home brew kit. So that you can buy in, like, you know, Do It All or places like that.
Yeah.
You can buy a homebrew.
You showed your age there now.
Yeah, I know. Look, I feel like this is ages, this programme. Homebase, is it?
No, that's gone
that's
as well.
Gone.
Yeah, B&Q, I think.
B&Q, right, okay. Any of the, there are other
Would they sell them there now?
Probably not, actually, would
probably
they?
Just go on Amazon, they'll be on there.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how we started with the home. So it was the scaling up, you know, obviously. And it's, you know, you go from stirring something with like a spoon to then stirring it with a big wooden paddle to then not having to stir it at all because a piece of machinery does that for you.
But how do you, how do you then, once you've made the beer, how do you then go about selling it to people? How do you, because you can't sell a secret, how do you then, once you've spent all that time trying to make a beer?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just all about volume, getting it out there and people liking it, you know. One thing that happens with a lot of microbreweries is they cannot replicate their recipe because it's so bespoke. So, but as you get bigger, you need, if somebody likes your beer, you've got to be able to replicate it exactly. I mean, you'll probably notice, if you know anything about microbreweries, they have a lot of new beers all the time. And what a new beer is where they haven't been able to make it quite exactly.
So they change recipes.
Yeah. So they call it something else. So that's how, you know, we've got a small range of beers compared to a lot of breweries. We do about six or seven. But
which is your favourite beer?
IPA, definitely, because, you know, the taste, and it's quite fashionable now, isn't it? It's very hoppy. And
on the subject of fashionable, might be an unpopular opinion, but I think a lot of people buy craft beers because of the design on the can.
Yes,
because
they
have some really cool cans, and I've tried some, and they taste like shit.
And I think that's right.
And another unpopular opinion: I've not found a beer from BrewDog that I've enjoyed.
James Watt, or whatever his name is, he's going to be after you, Pete.
I'm sorry, I've tried a lot of them, and I've not enjoyed any of them. So,
sometimes they're style over content, aren't they?
We won't be having him on the show, will we?
Clearly not.
We won't be having him on the show. Sorry, James, cancel. Wait, I'll ring him now. James, cancel the.
I don't know if that's you know, it's cool to drink BrewDog, or you know, people must like it because they drink it, and you can. Can you be like a shareholder?
Well, they have Equity for Punks, it's called.
Which, marketing, mate.
Yeah, well, you can buy shares, but all you get for your shares is a discount off their beer. Right. You don't get
Because we went out
that you don't like.
Yeah. My mate Damon, he likes it, and he took us out to one, and he wasn't drinking that night. He had this, like, pink, dark purple cherry alcohol. Yeah. It was disgusting. Yeah. It was horrible.
And so, and I think a lot of it is style over content. Yeah. I mean, a lot of microbreweries don't make a lager, for instance.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard to make a lager. Mm. Making a beer takes 5 days. That's all it takes. From the minute you put it into the tank to when it goes into the bottle is 5 days.
So if you put a beer into a tank and then you wanted to give it like a bit of a citrus, you just chuck some orange peel in.
Yes, you could
and
too,
if you put too much in, it then becomes too orangey, so you have to like balance it. Okay.
Yeah, so it's that simple, altering the taste. I mean, we've done things like rum and raisin stout and, you know, and you just put rum and raisins in it.
Maybe you need your own beer, Pete.
BrewDog put an old sock in. sock.
I can't say anything because I do like their IPA.
I quite like it, BrewDog. Yeah. I had the old Elvis juice over there. That's
quite
nice.
Yeah. But some of their beers are really strong. You can't, you know, they're like 6.2%.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not a session
beer,
is it?
Maybe that's what it's for me because I like a light lager.
What is your drink then, Pete? Because I'd have you down as a, like, porn star martini kind of man.
Fuck off. I like Guinness and Blackcurrant.
Yeah.
I like Corona, Sol, Budweiser, Coors Light. Something like, even a Stella is too strong for me. Grolsch is just disgusting. I like Leffe Blonde.
Ooh,
I like the Kronenbourg Blanc.
Bud is 5%.
Well, yeah, but it's very mellow. It doesn't taste strong.
The beer aficionado.
Well, it is.
I don't know if it's the percent or is it the hops that's the strong taste?
The taste, but I'm on about the strength of the beer.
So no, I mean the strength of the taste.
Oh, I see.
The alcohol content's not something I'd look at. It's just like I like them to taste light and refreshing.
Yeah.
So I mean, in terms of like you said, you talked about scalability. Then how do you then go with this big shiny equipment? Your beers that you've sort of created, what you think you want to like? How do you then scale that? How does that work? Is that one of them things that it just happens and then you think?
Well, the scaling of it is, you know, if it's like if you were making a cake and it needed 1 teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda for one cake.
Mm.
For 1,000 cakes, it needs 1,000 teaspoons of. Yeah. So it's scaling a recipe is just that easy.
Have you ever had it where you've been creating a batch and then you've had to literally just get rid of
it? Pour it all down the drain, yeah, many times. many times.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to get a recipe right, you know, there was lots and lots of beer went down the drain at Church Farm.
Mm. So. I mean, in terms of like challenges then, is that, would you say that's the main challenge for you guys?
Not anymore. I think we have a good quality product that is consistent, which is really important. Obviously, our challenge is around selling it.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, lots of pubs are tied and they can only buy their beer from certain brewers. And so the small brewer, like us, it's really tough, you know, to get in pubs. And
yeah, I can imagine.
So,
but that's the hardest bit, selling it.
Yeah.
And that's the bit I do.
Oh, you're pretty good at it, because we brought some here. So, I mean, moving on anyway, I want to quickly move over to Nathan. So, Nathan, Power Tool and Power Tools, you two couldn't be any different, really. So two guests, two sponsors that we got on the show. For me, obviously, we sort of came together. Rich, was it you? Yeah. It was Rich. Rich got in contact with you. Obviously, you've been buying our products. Yep. Really easy to deal with, like absolute dream to work with. Didn't really know about Power Tool, but obviously, after going on the Facebook page that you guys do,
yep,
and watching that grow, that's another reason, obviously, I wanted to bring you on board with the show. So just explain to everybody that's listening and watching, what is Power Tool and what is it that you guys do and what type of stuff are you offering to people?
Power Tool, mate, is obviously we class ourselves as a market-leading seller of power tools and accessories. We try to make it a bit different. We try and make our customer base more reachable by going through social media.
Yeah.
More interactive. Obviously, everyone speaks to me through the Facebook group.
Yeah.
Our Facebook group, Power Tool Mate Exclusive Deals.
Yeah.
Which has 50,000 members on.
Yeah. I mean, when did you start that? To get 50,000 on any social media.
We started that back in pre-lockdown. I think it was. It must have been.
So within a year.
Within a year on that.
Yeah.
Line. Yeah.
Because I mean, you'll know as well from your social how much effort and time that actually takes to get to a larger number, how many hours you must have invested in Instagram, for example.
Yeah, it's a long, hard slog.
Yeah. So to do that in a year, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was one of them ideas where we thought, how can we be a bit different? How can we market people a bit different rather than the old e-shot and the emails that everyone used to do all the time and all that kind of stuff where you get an email and you end up unsubscribing because it does your ad in every week.
Yeah, which people do on ours.
Yeah, and ours as well.
Yeah.
And we thought everyone uses Facebook, put similar to Instagram. I mean, our Instagram's quite big, but it's not huge. We sort of we put all our attention to that Facebook because I think it's a bit more, what we tried to create was a community.
Yeah.
When instead of doing a Facebook business page, we decided to do a Facebook group.
Yeah.
So everyone in that group feels a bit more of a community. Everyone can speak to each other, get advice.
Yeah.
Everyone's got someone to speak to, obviously me, and a face to put to Power Tool Mate.
Yeah.
With any issues, so we can jump on things quick and be a bit more.
You've got a question for him on issues or people chatting shit on the group.
Hold on. just before we talk about that.
Yeah.
So did you get into Power Tools because you were a tradesman or?
No, it's family business. So Power Tool Mate still is Westwood Building Services Limited, which back in the day we started off, I think the business is 45 years old now.
Okay.
Small little shop.
But your dad will love you for saying that, won't he?
Yeah, he's not that old. So we started off a small little business in Plymouth, selling fixings, consumables, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then they went into another bit, which is still a big part of our business, is joinery manufacturing products. So we sell hinges, hardware, sealants, all that kind of stuff. But that's another side of the business that not many people really know about.
Yeah.
It's sort of an older side of the business with our old existing customer base, with the joinery shops, which has sort of decreased in the last 10 years or so, because all that side of manufacturing's all gone to PVC now.
Yeah.
So it's not as big. But on the power tool side,
is that something that made you think I need to move across into a new market? Is that something?
Well, we did the power tools to supply the power tools to the joinery manufacturers.
Mm.
So all the bench joiners and that kind of stuff, they used to buy the power tools. We used to be quite small in it, and then we moved over to selling more power tools because obviously the market was there for the power tools, and that just grew and grew and grew and grew.
Yeah.
Westwood then got to the size where we actually started wholesaling to all the smaller shops.
Yeah.
So probably 8-10 years ago, all we really did was wholesale. So we used to buy in from the manufacturers direct, and then we used to wholesale out to all the smaller dealers.
Yeah.
The manufacturers got a bit funny with it because we were getting bigger and bigger and bigger, stepping on the toes of the manufacturers themselves. So then we decided to go, right, we sort of, over the space of 6 months, said, right, we're going to stop all the wholesale, and we're just going to go direct to end user, market end user. So that's how it all come about, really.
Yeah.
So in my head, when you're buying a power tool, obviously the main thing people are looking at is price.
Yeah.
And to achieve a competitive price, does that mean you've got to buy a lot of power tools?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I think everyone seems to think, oh, they come to the Facebook group and they have to do us a deal.
Yeah.
You can do a deal on a battery. It's 50 quid. You can sell it to people for 25 quid.
Yeah.
I wish it was like that. We'd all be billionaires. We would be saying.
Yeah.
Current prices on stuff.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, you sell it yourself.
Yeah.
It is very tight margins. Yeah. Very, very tight margins. I mean, you're not making huge, but it's a numbers game, what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, we hold about £15 million of stock at a time.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have a pretty big warehouse to store it all in.
So we've got a main depot over Salt Ash, which is our old existing depot. And then we've got a new depot now in Plymouth with three warehouses. We have a holding depot, two holding depots and a dispatch depot, which is sort of runs like an Amazon.
Yeah.
So the guys and I got a new scanning system, for the orders and all that kind of thing.
Just one more question for you, actually, Joe. Mm-hmm. How many bottles can you guys produce in a year? Because obviously listening to you talk about warehouses,
I
15.
I'd need a calculator. So each time we brew, that's 9,500 bottles.
Is it?
Yeah.
And that's in the 5 days?
Get your phone out, Jack. Do this some. Yeah, 5 days. So 9,500 bottles a day.
Yeah.
5 days a week you can brew. I mean, we could brew seven.
Well, you can't on the Sunday because it's a Sabbath, no. So we'll let you off there.
And
is that 70,000?
It's more than that, isn't it?
He's number dyslexic.
9,500 times five. Yep. That's a week, isn't it?
That's
47,500 bottles per week.
Yeah.
Times by 52.
51. Give us a week off.
No.
2.4 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
So can you fit them in your warehouse? Like?
No.
2.2.
Ready when you are. Now.
So yeah, apologies for butting in on there, but obviously, you talking about the size of your warehouse, and then you talking about that. Mm. Obviously, I was just in my head. I just, one of them curious questions. But 2.4 million bottles.
Yeah,
that's pretty crazy.
A lot of bottles.
Good effort.
So, but I mean, in terms of your business, then, Nath, like, we talk a lot about social media. Obviously, part of the reason we've all probably stumbled across each other is because of that. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that has enabled your business to become what it is now, rather than obviously what it was with the joinery and stuff like that? How has that enabled?
Yeah, I think it's made us much more aware in the market.
Yeah,
because a lot of Powersmoke was pretty new. A lot of people still didn't know about us, and I think it just helped spread the word and help bring more customers. I mean, we still get probably 500-600 people a week still joining the group now.
Mm.
And we haven't really pushed it. It's all organic growth. We've done no paid advertising.
I mean, just through
Facebook.
Just to give people an idea of the size, obviously these are your personal numbers, but how many orders, like say Black Friday, how busy are you on, say Black Friday? Because this is like the one thing that I always find obviously this is going to lead to the customer type thing that you wanted to touch on.
Yep.
Was I always feel like the customer sometimes never sees these types of things. Obviously, COVID now, a lot of businesses, yes, they'll use it as an excuse. However, Black Friday, for example, for you guys, what type of ridiculous, crazy, stupid numbers, orders-wise, how many?
On a Black Friday weekend, I think, well, we obviously grow every year. Yeah. But if we push it, turn all the deals on, you're probably looking 10,000 orders over a weekend.
So... just for anybody that's listening to that.
Imagine having to lick 10,000 stamps.
So when you're ringing me and moaning that your power time got there on.
So when I'm ringing you going, Nath, I need four of these DeWalt batteries and then like you don't get back to... Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean, that is like, if you look at probably the first Black Friday then that you really did, what's the difference in numbers to there, just to give people an idea of the growth in a time frame?
Well, we've... from last year, so we'll take COVID for example. So pre-COVID into now, we've sort of doubled our turnover.
Yeah.
So
during COVID,
yeah. So you'll be looking whatever we did last Black Friday, we'll probably double that again.
So 20,000 potentially this year.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But growing year on year, we tend to double our turnover year on year. So,
Unbelievable. So I mean, that's sort of trying to lead on to your question about customers and consumers, because I know obviously
obviously you're a social media led sort of business, so you rely on people really giving you good feedback and good reviews, but then obviously you're going to get some dickheads who you cannot please no matter what you do.
So bad reviews.
I was just wondering, so if someone buys something off you and then they message you and say, oh, it's broken or whatever, and it, you get it sent back to you and you open the box and they've dropped it off a scaffold or set it on fire.
Yeah,
and they say, oh, it's like that when I opened it. How do you deal with that? Because whatever you say, however you try and deal with that, they're not going to be happy.
No.
Because they've lied to you. It's like me when I go to a customer, can you service my boiler? And you get there and it's fucking on fire. And just tell me before I come that it's...
They knew you were a firefighter or an aspiring firefighter.
So the fact that they've lied to you, there's no way for you to get... Because you can't call them a liar.
No.
So how do you deal with it?
I think it's part of the industry. I think it's part of the online... You probably get the same with what you do of the online industry. You've always going to get that selection of people who want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever stop it. And you can't really... I mean, you can ring a bloke up and say, oh, you've lied, you've done this, you've done that. But they're only going to argue to the blue in the face anyway.
Yeah. And they just go online and leave you a shit review.
Yeah. So we just deal with it. We say, right... I mean, it's the same bloke sent it back every week and ordered something and said, oh, this is broke. Or he bought a new one and sent back his used one that was broke. We'd obviously pick it up. But we just try and focus on making that customer service experience good and fast and efficient. So I think sometimes you just got to take it and get on with it.
Yeah. I mean, when you're scaling then at that size, because it's a similar sort of thing here, obviously not to the craziness of you guys, how do you prepare yourself? And the same for you, because I mean, how many beers in your first year did you sell, for example?
Oh, gosh, I can't even remember.
Something like a 500, 1,000.
Yeah.
So how many beers would you, obviously, COVID.
It sort of creeps up on you though, doesn't it? You don't think one day it's 500 and the next week it's 1,000. It doesn't happen like that. And you just suddenly, oh, I'm exhausted, I'm just going to sit down. I wonder how many beers we've done this week. You know, afterwards, you don't know when you're in it, do you?
No.
And you know, for me, I mean, I love work anyway, but I'm there's 7 days in a week and there's 24 hours in a day.
But you only brew for 5, Jan.
Yeah, I know, but I don't have to. I could brew for 7. You could brew twice a day.
Twice on a Sunday.
Because it only takes 8 hours.
Twice on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And when you first started, was it like, I don't know if this is true or something I heard, but when Amazon first started, for the first 3 years, he was operating at a loss because he had faith that he knew it was going to get to the profit. Yeah. So when you first started it.
Yeah. We operated at a loss. Actually, we didn't operate at a loss, but that's because none of us got paid. So we probably did. If we'd have, it was many years before we took any money out of the business at all. You know, everything was just going straight back in.
So because there's a lot of people that want to start a business, but then they just expect a Lamborghini within 6 months.
I don't know whether people do now, actually, but yeah, I mean,
Instagram sort of pushes that.
Well, yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
I mean, what bit of advice would you give if somebody was looking to start maybe making beers, or what bit of advice, business advice, would you give?
Do it now, round by me.
Yeah. Stay off my patch.
Yeah.
Beer
Get
wars.
Off my land.
Beer wars. I mean, what would you suggest as well, Nath? Because it's sort of like the landscape's completely changing now with social media, with direct to consumer. What would you say is your bit of advice if you were going to say to somebody starting a business? Or
I always just think you've got to try and stay one step ahead
of
what everyone's doing. And not follow people, but try and stay that little step ahead of everyone all the time. Because like I say, we started the marketing. I mean, I've obviously a lot of people who've done social media marketing, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, have you got any background in marketing, or is it
not at all?
Yeah, because I haven't either. No. Have you?
No.
Don't you find that some of the best social media is just the average person that people can relate to? Not someone thinking every post has got to be targeted. We've got to say this. We've got to use these words, just be real, just be a normal person, and people will relate to it.
It's like the product placement thing. I think Jack touched on it earlier. Don't hold your beer like this. You know, just drink your beer.
Evian. Evian is
Legends water, Pete.
Is an anagram of naive.
Yeah, it is.
Or is it spelled backwards? Naive. So don't, you know,
Pete.
You gave me this. Have you got some kind of deal going with Evian?
Trade Legends, mate. Plug it. I mean, so what's the future then for both of you? Where do you see Church Farm Brewery?
Yeah, I mean, I have these conversations now based on my age, obviously. I have no desire to stop working anytime soon. We're doing a lot of work with companies like yourself where people want bespoke labelled beers, in hotels, restaurants, all of those sorts of things.
We're
not against that at all.
Would you say that's where you're targeting more, is that sort of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. We're also, because our brewery is so big, we're able to brew for other breweries because some really cool breweries haven't got the capacity to make the amount of beer that they can sell.
So that investment that you made at the start is...
So we make their beer for them. So who they will remain nameless, obviously. But yeah, so that again is something else that we do. One thing we do have in the Warwickshire countryside is space. And being on a farm...
And fresh water now after Mr. Stickman came out.
Yeah, we've got a well on the farm, so we don't pay for any water. It just comes straight up out of the ground. Wow. So, and given that beer is 94% water, that's quite a good cost saving.
There you go, then, Pete. 6% beer, mate. I mean, so for you as well, Nath, I mean, like, obviously, you guys are growing at a crazy rate. Where do you see your business going in the next few years?
Yeah, I think the target for us going forward now is just to start branching out into more product. Because we do so much on the powder side. We don't do anything with the clothing, accessories, consumables, all that kind of stuff. Try and move towards being more of a complete package for customers.
Right.
So we can target every trade. You can go online. You can order your power tool. You can order your accessory to go with it. You can order your consumables. And make sure the service is there for the next day delivery.
Yeah.
And bring that whole package together.
Just to clarify for people listening at home, if you're listening to Nathan, there's no deliveries to Northern Ireland.
Yes, no deliveries to Northern Ireland.
Same.
that's one thing
every
I said
day
to you
about
customers is literally on your Facebook page, deliveries to Northern Ireland. So just anybody listening to Nathan, just to make it clear, I'll be the spokesman for him. There's no deliveries.
But
no matter how many times you tell people that, people will still ask it.
Yeah.
I've done social media posts where I've said, this is the product I fitted. This is where I bought it from. This is how much it was. And I will get a message saying, how much
did you buy it?
Where'd you buy it from, mate? So I've written it in, but I will take time out of my day to reply to you and tell you, because the trouble with my social media is if I don't reply to someone, the first few times is fine, but then they start to get a bit, oh, why isn't he replying to me?
And then they just drop the C-bomb in your DMs.
So I have to try and reply to everyone because I don't want anyone to think I think I'm too, you know, like, because I've got some followers, I'm better than them, so I have to try and reply to these messages.
That's one thing that people don't see on the show, because I see you replying at silly times on the night. I'm the same. Same when I have
messages from you at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the surprise for him is that I answer it.
I need beers at 5 a.m.
What are you wearing?
are you stirring your...
It's going down that route again.
Are you brewing those beers at 5 a.m.? That turned very quickly there,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
So, I mean, thank you very much for coming on the show. I know, obviously, it's only brief, but I just wanted to give everybody that's sort of watching or listening a brief background to all the sponsors. Now, we're going to go over and you're going to both throw some darts. So we're going to try and win some prizes on the old Power Tool Mate prizes over there. So we're going to go and do that. But before I do that, obviously, we've got lap times. Unfortunately, Joe, you did a DNF. Do you want to go on the board? We'll put you on the board if you really want to.
No, please don't. No,
you don't want to go on there.
I'm going to try and think of a skill that I have that you lot don't have if I ever come back.
Well, I can see Pete looking at me now. No, I can't think of anything.
Childbirth.
I can do that. That's very done true. Done it twice.
Nathan, let's write your name on there. You did it. We'll put PM as well. 1-0-1-6-2-2
See, I was there.
So I would ask you to put it on there, but you're short.
I'm too short. I'm only 4'5" like you. We'll go up there.
So we'll get Pete to put that on there. Pete's just going to be like...
So that's the top spot, isn't it?
That's the top spot.
He's not bitter.
He's got my name out there.
No, he's going to just put like a 6 or something, change it. There we go. So you're top of the leaderboard now.
That's what we like to see.
So yeah, thank you very much for coming on the very first show, Joe and Nathan. So let's go over now, throw some darts. This month we're going to be giving away a massive tool bundle prize consisting of a Unilite tool bag, Jackhammer t-shirts, Church Farm Brewery merch and some Trade Legends beer. To win this, all you have to do is simply answer who got the high score, Joe or Nathan. And to win our main prize, a £500 Power Toolmate voucher, all you have to do is simply guess the combined score of 12 darts of both players. Closest wins.
I'm going to get out of the way.
Hopefully, Joe, your darts is better than your
it's not, your Xbox driver. That's the point.
So we'll go over and do this now.
I'm going to have to spend some time thinking about my skill set.
So give everybody a little bit of an idea of what we're doing. First up from Church Farm Brewery is
closer because I'm
Joe,
the girl,
the destroyer, Reynolds. Oh!
In the ball. Oh!
Ow!
I wasn't looking at that one then.
Oh, my toes!
Ah! Oh, that's in.
Bloody hell, Joe. Right then.
Right.
Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping up to throw his six darts tonight.
Be kind, Nathan.
Nathan, the notorious cox.
Pretend.
Here he comes. Oof.
Oh, he's done it before.
At him. You can see him down the Swan and Duck on a Saturday night. Swan. Ah. Look at that. Look at that grouping.
Yeah. It's not near the 20, though.
What's he got? Right groupie, isn't he? Just a little bullseye on a Saturday. Just catchphrase, bullseye, strike it lucky.
Everybody what loves a bit of bully. Yeah.
What Saturday TV? And it was like, and you can win your very own camcorder. And you were like, yeah.
He's good at voices, isn't he?
And one.
Ask him about the voice he does when we do our Christmas giveaway.
Which one?
Your elf voice.
Elf voice.
I can't do elf on demand.
I've seen it.
I can't do elf on demand. Yes, yes, Santa. Okay, Santa. My balls are roasting by the fire. I don't even know where that comes from.
A little weirdo.
It's rather worrying. So yeah, should we go for some food?
I think that's everything.
Yeah, what time are we on?
8 o'clock.
Perfect.
Good.
Look at that. Just got to remember to lock up the office now.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Legends podcast. Bloody marvellous. With thanks to our sponsors, Church Farm Brewery, the best beers in town. Also, Power Tool Mate. If you want to get your hands on a really good tool, it's the only place to shop. Lastly, our good friends Fix Radio, the only radio station specifically for the trade in the UK.